Hello, everyone. Today we'll be discussing 10 additional questions in our Q&A series. These questions are from the Pure Experiences Satsang, and the questions are given as part of the end of step 3 quiz, which is to assess the student's knowledge before moving on to the awareness practices or experiments. To make the most of this podcast, if you are in the Path of Knowledge program and studying for the test, I would recommend that you pause after each question and try to answer it yourself out loud. Again, we'll be using the framework that I presented in the introduction episode. The first step is to validate the question. Always be sure that you're answering a valid question, or it is guaranteed that your answer will be incorrect. Second is to determine the content area that you'll be covering in your question, and be sure not to mix concepts or ideas. The third would be to stay focused and provide a reasonable answer in a calm demeanor, and be sure to think while you listen to your words as they come out of your mouth. And of course, stop and ask for time if you need it. So let's get started with our first question. What happens when the seeker does not have the required qualities? It still tries to practice. So this question is a relatively straightforward question from early in the Path of Knowledge program, and it talks about the qualities of a seeker. And the qualities of a seeker, as we might remember, can be broken down into ones that are mandatory or required, and those that are valuable and able to be cultivated while on the Path of Knowledge. A student must have an intense curiosity for this type of knowledge, and they also must have a desire of liberation or freedom from suffering. If neither of these two characteristics are present, a seeker will not even find the Path of Knowledge. On the other hand, if both of those qualities are present and a seeker attempts to progress on the Path of Knowledge, if we can use the word progress, because remember this is a pathless path, if a student doesn't have the qualities of critical thinking, which include open-mindedness, skepticism, and others, it's easy for a seeker to take the teachings of a guru or of a book and take them at face value without testing with direct experience. So ultimately, what happens when the seeker does not have the required qualities and still tries to practice, there will ultimately still be suffering and there will be confusion. And without the required qualities, a seeker can even cause harm to themselves, because it's likely that they may be building additional ignorance and additional suffering because of their misunderstandings. The second question, when we get knowledge, what do we get essentially? This is another question that focuses on definitions in the Path of Knowledge program. Very early in the program, we learn about the definitions of knowledge, ignorance, and information, and the means for each. Knowledge in the Path of Knowledge is defined as experience that's organized in the memory, which reduces ignorance and blind beliefs. And when we look at this question, it's asking us, what do we get, essentially? And in this question, it's assuming that we gain something when we acquire knowledge. But as I just stated, knowledge is a subtractive term in the Path of Knowledge. Therefore, the question is a bit tricky in that we don't get anything in the end after acquisition of knowledge. We drop all of our blind beliefs, all of our ignorance, and we are ultimately left with nothing other than self-realization, which is the recognition of our true self as the experiencer of all experience, which is not separate, and ultimately the whole existence itself. The third question. Why is a guru not a valid means of knowledge? Why do we still need a guru? Again, this is discussed early in the Path of Knowledge program when we discuss the means for acquiring knowledge. And if the definition of knowledge is experience organized within the memory, the only way to acquire that knowledge is through our direct experience. And we can also utilize our logic to extrapolate other experience. A guru is not a valid means of knowledge because what a guru provides is information. Information can be teachings we hear from others, or from books, from gurus, etc. And that information can point to knowledge, but the guru is still not a valid means of knowledge. We must apply our own direct experience and logic. The second part of this question is, why do we still need a guru if a guru does not provide knowledge? Well, the word guru means destroyer of darkness. And if we take the darkness metaphor, how can somebody find their way out of a pitch dark cave without the guidance of someone who knows the landscape? In the same way, we as seekers are not able to find our way out of the ignorance, because the ignorance creates darkness or blind spots, and we require a guru to find those blind spots for us and to illuminate areas of ignorance. Otherwise, it'll be very difficult for a seeker to uproot some of the more fundamental blind beliefs that we have. The guru has also made all of the same mistakes that you have made and will make on your path. So why not learn from somebody who has already been through the terrain rather than try to do it yourself? The next question, who is transformed by self-realization? So when we try to validate this question, we see it as a who question. And when it comes to non-duality, if there is a who question, you can be quite sure that this is an invalid question, just off the bat. This question is assuming that there is a person that's transformed by self-realization. Self-realization is when we realize that the individual is actually illusory, that it's an experience arising to the experiencer, and it's always been that way. It's a simple realization of what's already been present. Nobody's transformed, everything's the same, although there is no longer identification with the mind or body that we take to be us. Self-realization is recognition that we are the experiencer, this pure subjectivity that's ever present and is the essence of the entire existence itself. We are that and have always been that. So therefore, no one is transformed by self-realization. The next question is, what is non-dual truth? And again, with non-duality, if we're talking about an individual or an object, or if we're trying to objectify non-duality in any way, it's possible that we're going to be tripping up a bit. We have to ask ourselves, what is the definition of truth? And again, this is an early concept in the path of knowledge. Truth is arbitrary and subjective, and is dependent upon the criteria by which you define true and false. So in non-duality, there is really only oneness, or this existence, or this experiencing, that encompasses both the true and the false. So that's one way to view this question. The other might also be getting at the essence of the non-dual teachings. What is the bottom line? What is the most fundamental thing that you can say about non-dual teachings, keeping in mind that non-duality, to ever speak about non-duality, if we speak about it, we've created subject and object, and therefore have fallen out of non-duality. So really using words to define or to speak of non-duality is erroneous to begin with. But what is the most fundamental statement we can make about these teachings? And that may also be what this question is asking. And that is a statement that's given very, very early in the Path of Knowledge program, if not in the very first episode. And that is that the fundamental truth, or the fundamental piece of knowledge that we must know and realize, is that there is only this existence appearing to itself in illusory forms. That sums up the entire teaching of non-duality. The next question, what is memory? This is a straightforward definition question, and it asks us to dive into the experience, or into the illusion. And remember that when we are talking about the illusion, that much of this is theoretical, and there are hypotheses that we derive from our direct experience. So at a macro level, when we look around the room, we look around at our experience, we see that there's change occurring constantly. And that change can be extrapolated down to the most basic, microscopic, fundamental level. So we say that there must be some sort of microscopic change or fundamental change that occurs that builds this entire illusory experience. And that fundamental change is what we call vibrations. And that single state change from one state to the other is what we call a fundamental vibration. And those vibrations, theoretically, hypothetically, can self-organize and develop larger structures which can take on or store incoming patterns or vibrations that can be played back later. So all memory is an organized pattern of vibrations which can store and play back incoming vibrations. The next question, what is the difference between waking, dreaming, and projected states? Again, this question is diving into the illusion, and it's asking us to make a difference and assuming that there is a difference between the three states of waking, dreaming, and projected states. A seeker can verify this through direct experience, but with self-realization, taking the perspective of the whole, taking the perspective of our true nature, which is the whole of the existence itself, is that there is no difference between waking, dreaming, and projected state. There is experience, illusory experience appearing to the existence or the experiencer as a whole. The only reason we say that there is a waking state that's different from dreaming or projected is that the waking state appears to be more organized and role-bound. Although the dreaming and projected states are also organized and role-bound in their own way, it's just that the waking state seems to have a larger impression on the memory. We might also say that the waking state is just a subset of the dream state. This whole experience, no matter what state it is a dream. Illusory experiences, dreamlike experiences, appearing to the experiencer, which is the whole of the existence. That's what is occurring in each state. And in that way, there's no difference between them. If we want to dive into the illusion a bit more, we can also say that there are differences in the bodies that are apparently present in each state, as well as the senses that are utilized compared to the waking state. Although I think this is beyond the scope of the question. The next question, what layers are needed for awareness? Awareness is a term that's defined in the program and is different from other sources that you may have seen outside of the Path of Knowledge program. Awareness refers to a function or a layer of the memory structure that is able to state, I am the experiencer, these experiences are illusory, and I am the whole of the existence. This awareness is only present, as far as we know, in humans, at least in this waking state. And this highest level requires not only the intellect, a refined intellect, but it also requires all of the layers below it. If there was no layer of the body, there would be no individual seeker trying to obtain enlightenment. If there were no mineral layers, the necessary micronutrients would not be available for this body. So awareness requires all layers of the memory structure. The next question, how to go beyond the illusion? So looking at the structure of this question, it is a process question asking how to go beyond the illusion. And what is beyond the illusion, beyond duality, we could say would be non-duality. And we know that any time we're asking about a process to achieve non-duality, that we've gone down the wrong path, that there's some ignorance baked into this question. There is no process to reach non-duality. There's no process to go beyond the illusion. Non-duality is present here and now. Experiencing without experiencer or an experience is here right now. And so therefore, there's no way to go beyond the illusion. The next question, how can the limited know the unlimited? And I actually spent an entire podcast episode going over this one question. And again, this is a process talking about the limited, knowing the unlimited. And it's important that we define some terms here first. Knowing always implies a knower and a known. Knowledge or knowing is always in the realm of duality. The unlimited here could be another word that we would use for the whole of the existence. And the limited would be a term we might use for the experience or even the individual memory structure. Local memory could be another term. So how does knowledge even arise in the first place? How do we know anything? Again, it requires the local memory structure, which takes incoming vibrations. This local memory is only able to do this through the use of the senses, seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, and all of the other internal senses that we have. These are also memory structures within, or vibrations within, the larger memory system. All of what we experience is filtered through those limited avenues of the senses. There would be no knowledge at all if it weren't for those memory structures. And by definition, these must be limited. It's literally filtering unnecessary or incompatible vibrations from that which is organized and compatible for survival. Now, what if we had a sense that was able to take in all of the vibrations of the existence, everything? What type of experience would that produce? If we use the metaphor of a screen and a projector, the screen being the local memory, the projector being the vibrations of the existence, if we shined 100 movies onto that screen, would any experience, any meaningful experience, be generated? And the answer to that is no. So ultimately, we can say that this limited experience, which is limited by the senses and generated through vibrations in the memory structure, can never know the unlimited, because the unlimited, if filtered through these senses, would produce a nonsensical, non-usable experience. So by definition, the limited can never know the unlimited. Further, if there was ever a person or individual that said, I've known the unlimited and here is the features of the unlimited, it will, just by describing it in those objective features, become limited. So those are our 10 questions for today. I hope that they were useful for you. And please feel free to reach out if you have any questions or clarifications or comments.